This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Envision by Sherilyn Kenyon. Read by Holter Graham. Prologue. So this is your great solution. Really. When the going gets tough, the tough drown themselves in chocolate milk and beignets? Irritated at being disturbed, Nick Gaucher arched a brow at the sarcastic tone that normally he'd appreciate. But right now he didn't want to hear it. Especially not from some cocky demon overlord who was supposed to be his subordinate bodyguard. Besides, it was easy for Caleb to judge. Lord Malthus was tall, ripped, and had those perfect dark good looks that got him anything he wanted any time he wanted it, without even having to use his powers of persuasion. Provided it didn't come from one surly, unreasonable Cajun half-demon teen who was currently trying to drown his misbegotten woes in a mountain of beignets and chocolate milk. So yeah, Caleb had it right. This was what Nick wanted to do with the rest of his life. Growling low in his throat, Nick reached for another powdered, sugar-covered pastry. "You have a baby to eat, or village to terrorize, or something?" With a deadly grimace, Caleb dared to pull the sugary confection from Nick's hand before Nick could stuff it in his mouth. He was lucky Nick didn't take a plug out of his flesh. "Or are you trying for a diabetic coma?" Caleb dropped his gaze to the 6 plates on the small round table that were stacked in front of Nick, all of which attested to just how upset Nick was that he'd gobbled them down like a karate demon on a 3-day bender after an all-week fast. "Please tell me you didn't eat all of those on your own." He would tell Caleb that, but it would be a lie. Nick passed a grudging grimace to his friend. "What do you care?"
"We care, boyo."
He winced at the sound of Aaron's deep, lilting accent as the ancient Celtic god came up behind him through the small crowd that was seated at the Café du Monde around him and Caleb. Tall and muscled, the blonde war deity moved to stand beside the demon so that the two of them could stare down at him with the same disappointed smirk. Beautiful. Just what Nick had put on his Christmas list, the mutual disdain of two ancient beings who wanted to collectively kick his half-demonic ass for being a churlish baby. And why not? He was long past due for a good old-fashioned pity party. All that was missing were balloon animals and Haagen-Dazs. Along with zombie clowns from hell trying to eat the tourists and kill Nick for his powers, because face it, here lately that was how every party Nick attended ended. "So that's it, then. You're just gonna quit."
"Oh, yeah, that helps. Bring in the girlfriend, 'cause I just don't feel worthless enough."
Nick sighed as Nakota Kennedy piled on with the other two. Lithe and ever graceful, she was still the most beautiful girl he'd ever seen off-screen, with brown hair and vivid green eyes that usually lit up whenever she looked at him. Cody had won his heart the first day they met, and had held it in her hands ever since. But right now, he just didn't want to hear it from anyone, not even his angelic girl. Hanging his head, he pushed his chair back to face her.
"What do you want me to say, Code? You saw what I did? It's hopeless. I'm going to end this world. Whether it's tomorrow or 1,000 years from now, I'm going to lose it all. Break bad and tear humanity apart. Doesn't matter what we do. Whatever we try, we just delay the inevitable outcome. So I'm gonna sit here with my eats and just..."
He let his voice trail off as the full horror of his future played through his mind for the 5,000,000th time. He was the end of everything. Everyone, all he loved, the entire world, would one day fall to Nick's army of demons. Yeah. There was something to put on his college applications. That ought to have schools lining up to accept him. Who wouldn't want that as their alumnus? We have graduated senators, presidents, movers and shakers, and the Malachi demon who ate the world whole.
It was the one reality Nick wanted to deny and couldn't. Everything eventually came back to that one inescapable fact he wanted to run away from and couldn't. I'm only 16. Too young to deal with this crap.
He was supposed to be worried about his grades, about keeping his girl happy, staying out of trouble, his mom finding his friend's porn magazine stashed in his room, getting to work on time, making curfew, not hell gates and demons coming for the throats of his family and friends. Definitely not about the fact that his birthright was to bring on the destruction of all humanity. Suddenly Nick stood up as a severe panic attack hit him so hard that it left him reeling. Unable to cope with it, he stumbled toward the rear exit of the cafe that led toward the French market that ran parallel to the Mississippi River. This time of day, it was completely empty, thankfully. His heart pounding wildly and with no real destination in mind, he rushed down the back alley where bronze statues were poised beside benches as he tried to catch his breath and find some semblance of sanity in this madness that had become his extremely complicated life. Yet, as he ran, those statues seemed to be watching him today with their beady, blank eyes. Yeah, it was a stupid thought, but what the heck? Nothing made sense anymore. After all, the Riverwalk was actually a front that opened to a backworld prison ward that held off demons. So why couldn't these statues be as alive as the ones there? For all he knew, Caleb could pass his hand over them and they could be just as mocking and demeaning. Made as much sense as the fact that Nick's girlfriend was a ghost, his best friend an immortal demon, and his newest crew addition was a Celtic god of war who'd been cursed into the body of a puka that Nick had rescued from a hell realm where he'd been sent as a test to save his mother's life. And that he was the Malachi. Yeah. His life was that screwed up.
Nick!
Caleb tackled him to the hard concrete sidewalk. Ah, jeez. He seriously needed those additional bruises to explain to his mother, who already thought he was getting mugged on a regular basis.
Get off me!
He roared in his demonic tone as he shoved at his friend. But Caleb didn't flinch. He kept him pinned on the ground.
What's going on in that head of yours, Gaucher?
Nick pulled the eye of Ananka out of his pocket.
I saw it, he snarled. Everything. All outcomes lead to the same final conclusion. Don't you understand? It's hopeless. I'm a monster, and you're all dead.
Cody staggered back. The color drained from Caleb's face an instant before he let go.
You're wrong.
But the conviction was missing from his words this time. Nick shoved the medallion at him.
See for yourself. I'm gonna kill you too, Kay. And Aaron, all of you.
Caleb took the ancient amulet that looked like some freaky green dragon eye set in the middle of a beveled, rust-colored disc and held it to the center of his forehead so that he could see the future that had haunted Nick since he'd made the mistake of looking at it. Nick scowled as he realized that by doing it, Caleb had just admitted to something he'd been concealing from all of them. He had the blood of a fate god in his veins. Otherwise, the amulet would have destroyed him. Not even Cody dared to touch it. But Caleb hadn't thought twice about taking it in his hand. Very interesting. Cody sat down on a bench a few feet away as unshed tears glistened in her green eyes.
I refuse to believe it. There has to be a way to stop the future. The Erelim wouldn't have sent me back unless there was hope.
Aaron swallowed hard.
You know the cosmic laws. A pith point is a set piece. If it's to be, it's not.
Caleb pulled the eye away, then rubbed at his forehead.
There are other outcomes.
He glanced at Cody.
But you're not going to like any of them.
Nick glared at Caleb.
That's not what I saw when I looked into that thing.
Caleb snorted at Nick's churlish tone.
You're fatalistic. You know,
"Caleb," he mocked Nick's Cajun drawl in a falsetto, "I don't have a headache. It's a giant brain tumor eating my flesh off my head. I know it. I didn't stub my toe, Kay. I amputated it. Look, that's not a hangnail. It's a bleeding stump."
Nick shoved at him. "Shut up. It's true, and you know it."
"So, what's the solution?" Cody asked.
"The simplest?"
Caleb sighed.
"What Ambrose said. We erase everything. Reset his meager little brain to zero and let his life play out to the first pith point."
"No,"
Nick growled.
"My mother is not some arbitrary pith point we lose. I've seen a different solution. I will not sacrifice her life in this. I'd rather die. Just kill me and be done with it."
Aaron laughed out loud, as if the mere suggestion was preposterous. "You've got your full Malachi powers, boyo, and Adarian's now dead. There's no dying for you now. Only slavery, with torture being optional."
"Until you have a child."
Yeah, Caleb just had to toss that reminder into the mix.
"I have a brother. Can't I give this to him and let him be the Malachi instead of me?"
Caleb shook his head. "That ship left the harbor when you took the Malachi sword and picked your Saras for your army. You are the full Malachi now, Nick. There's no one doing it. Not until you have a son who kills you for your powers and he designates his own generals." Pressing the heels of his hands to his eyes, Nick cursed them all.
"Why didn't you stop me from taking that stupid sword from Livia?"
Caleb stood up.
"Like you would have listened."
"I might."
Cody shook her head. "No, you wouldn't have. You never do."
"They were right. He just didn't want to hear it."
"If we erase everything, where does that leave me?"
"The migraine,"
Aaron said under his breath. Before Caleb could answer, the statue beside Cody opened its eyes and turned its head to stare at Nick.
"I knew it!"
They all ignored his Tourette's as Cody jumped away from the statue to eye it warily.
"Malachi,"
it smiled eerily before it stood and headed for Nick. Both Aaron and Caleb cut its path off. The statue tisked at them.
"Still hiding behind your friends?
Shame you don't have the same loyalty to them."
Rising to his feet, Nick scowled.
"Excuse me? I emphatically disagree. I protect my friends always."
"You can disagree all you want, but I know the truth, and so do they."
The statue held its hand out toward Nick and opened its palm. A ball of light hovered there, showing him images of another ally they'd thought had died in their last battle against the demons that had been trying to kill Caleb in his own home.
"Zavid isn't dead, Malachi. He's only abandoned by you. Have you the nerve to come get him? Or will you stay and protect the princess?"
It glanced meaningfully at Cody before it turned back to sneer at Nick.
"After all, he who leaves Rome loses Rome."
And with those words spoken, the ball vanished, and the statue returned to being immobile again. Nick's jaw went slack.
"Zavid's not dead?"
"It's a trap."
Caleb turned to face Nick.
"Don't listen."
"You knew?"
Caleb shook his head.
"It's not as simple as you think.
Noir used his body to attack you. No one survives that kind of possession, not even an Ammon. Well, his soul might be with Noir now, his body isn't."
In that moment, Nick's Malachi powers kicked in and fed him the information he needed. The aether around him began to whisper with information and facts. He saw Zavid in the Nether Realm being tormented in a pit where Noir threw his enemies. Wincing, he couldn't believe that no one had told him about this.
"I have the powers to bring him back and restore him?"
"Again, not that simple."
Nick stared aghast at Caleb.
"How is it not that simple?
You haven't learned those powers. Yes, you sort of, kind of,
Did Caleb always have to use that mocking tone? Learn some necromancy?
A little bit, Cody added for emphasis.
But you're not at the level where you can actually command those powers with any degree of skill.
Yeah, boyo, you could bring him back as a goat.
I already did that to Modug, Nick mumbled, then louder. But I got him better and made him human again. Sort of.
Nick rolled his eyes at Caleb's sarcastic tone. Was it too much to ask for his friends to have Alzheimer's? They were old enough to be senile and then some. But no, leave it to him to be surrounded by demons with perfect recall.
You're not being helpful,
Nick growled under his breath.
I can't leave Zavid in Asmodea.
That was a hell realm of unimaginable horrors. He'd only been to it once and briefly, but it had been long enough to leave a crappy impression. Cocking his brow, Caleb crossed his arms over his chest.
Thought you were out of the fight. What happened to drowning your woes with beignets?
Nick glanced at Cody, then Aaron, before he met Caleb's gaze.
That was before I found out one of our own was being held by he who wants me chained to his bony throne. I don't leave my friends behind to suffer in my stead. Especially not Zavid. Not after he saved my life and not after everything he's been through. I made him a promise and I intend to keep it.
With those words spoken, he headed toward home to make plans. Cody watched as Nick lowered his head and went into that sexy predator's lope that he always fell into whenever he had a mission to protect someone he loved or a fight for someone else. He had no idea that he even did it, nor did he know just how incredibly adorable he was when he did so. That stubborn Cajun blood and his ever-faithful heart were why she couldn't bring herself to complete her mission to assassinate him. Why she loved him, even though he would one day kill every member of her family. Kill her. It was so hard to reconcile this decent young man with the beast she knew she'd one day face in battle. How could anyone change so much? She cut her gaze to Caleb. What did you see in the eye? What changes him?
The ruthless bitch who ultimately betrays us all. Death.
A single tear slid past her tight control. Caleb was right.
Death changed everyone.
Each time she'd buried a member of her family, it had left a savage hole in her heart. One that never fully healed. Nick had so little family to begin with, and as a Malachi, his natural state was that of hatred and cruelty. His mother and her unwavering love were the only things that kept him from becoming the same monster his father had been. The monster he was destined to become.
So, Charisse is definitely a Pith?
She asked Caleb. Pith points were those events that were chiseled solid into everyone's life, predestined intersections, such as birth and death, that were unstoppable events nothing could alter. What happened in between, to bring them into being, were transitory and subject to free will. Humans and other creatures could move things around the pith points and make a thousand changes. Those arbitrary events were never predetermined, but a pith. It was set in firmly in the Divine Book of Fate. Nothing and no one could change that.
Caleb shook his head.
No, she's not a Pith. Her death isn't necessarily what sends him over.
So we can save her? He nodded.
At the cost of your future. Everything's a trade-off.
Aaron flinched.
All magic comes with a price.
And the balance must be maintained.
Caleb sighed before he returned to speaking to Cody.
You and his mom were both born of the primal source to balance the Malachi. Charisse in the past and you in the future. Both of you, his possible anchors. The two of you should have never met.
But the Erelim had cheated and altered the rules. Now the law of the universe was attempting to right itself and correct their audacity for daring to tamper with fate and natural order. Of all beings,
As the keepers of cosmic order, they should have known better. Unfortunately, desperate people moved in desperate ways and did desperate things.
And what of the prophecy? Can we save him?
Caleb rubbed nervously at his neck.
Maybe. But it's not so simple.
It requires a supreme sacrifice. One of utter love to reach him at his darkest hour. Even then, there aren't any guarantees.
Cody despised those last four words. Every bit as frustrated as she was, Caleb raked his hand through his hair.
We wanted Nick motivated, but not this motivated.
He dropped his hand.
He goes into Asmodea, and we're screwed.
She couldn't agree more. However, they had one not-so-small problem.
We can't stop him. His powers are too strong now.
Believe me, I know. I'm lucky I got him tackled just then. Worse, I can't go in there with him. Neither can Zev.
Our father would chain us down beside your uncle and hand-feed us to Noir's demons if he saw us protecting the Malachi.
He looked at Aaron. Don't be cutting them eyes at me, Malthus. Not sure if I can or not. Might be able to swing an invite from Thorn, but that'll only get me so far into that realm. Same for Dagon. You know how it goes when you're born of other pantheons. They tend not to let us come a-playing in their backyards.
Caleb let out a fierce groan.
Have I said today how much I hate your boyfriend, Cody?
Only a few dozen times since lunch.
Good. Don't want you to forget it.
Growling, he headed toward the street.
Where are you going?
To get my ass kicked again. You should come watch. You might actually enjoy it. I know I won't.
How she wished that was a joke.
Unfortunately, before this was through, they were all likely to get their butts handed to them. And their heads, too. Chapter 1 Nick stood in the center of his bedroom, staring at the symbols on his wall. They were ancient protection sigils that Caleb and his Aunt Menyara had placed there to keep out anything that could harm either him or his mother. The first time he'd noticed them as a small child, Menyara had told him they were special monster-away sprays that she'd made for him. It had made him feel extra loved and protected. Little had he known then that they weren't just for protection. Those early emblems had also been there to restrict his powers and bind them so that he couldn't accidentally uncover his birthright. As a result, he really didn't understand a lot about who and what he was, even now. But it was time he learned. He was through guessing and flying by the seat of his pants. If he was to save Zavid and not get enslaved by the oldest, most primal evil, he needed to really comprehend what he was capable of pulling off. And there was one person he knew who could answer this.
Zevikon?
Mr. Fuzzyboots rose up from the sofa to arch his back and yawn. Nick snorted at Zev's alternate feline form. I need you as a human, dude. Shed the catskin for a while. He flashed himself into his extremely tall human body. Although Nick couldn't blame him for wanting to spend most of his time in the lazy house cat incarnation, he wouldn't mind spending his days snoozing either. Not to mention the old powers had done a number on him when they'd cursed him to this state. Instead of being the boy band member he'd been born, his perfect good looks were now off-putting, and there was nothing they could do to change them. Heaven knew they'd tried enough L'Oreal products to convert the entire North American and European goth communities to normal hair colors. Instead of his natural black, Zev's hair was an unnatural shade of red on one side and a vibrant fake yellow on the other. If that wasn't bad enough, his eyebrows were a light electric blue that clashed with his rusty greenish-blue hazel eyes. At least he could fake being emo in this time period, but still, it had to suck to have your own family be so cruel as to condemn you to such a fate. Crossing his arms over his chest, Zev scowled at Nick.
What's trying to eat you now?
Nick rolled his eyes and ignored the question. Did you know Zavid was still alive? He made a peculiar noise. Alive is an interesting term, when one attempts to apply it to a soul-eating hellhound who was possessed by the source of all evil. But to be honest, I hadn't thought about it one way or another.
Would you mind applying your skills to it and telling me what you think?
Zev nodded slowly.
Yes. Given that he most likely couldn't be killed, per se, he probably does exist in a non-corporeal state in Asmodea.
Can I have the English translation of that?
Zev rubbed at the corner of his eye with his middle finger in a deliberate manner before he answered.
Remember when you were divided, your soul not in your body?
Like that wasn't seared into his brain, especially given the number of things that had tried to eat him, and it was how the two of them had bonded. Not something one forgets easily?
Well, there you go.
You lost me, Sparky. Nick scowled at something that confused him. If the soul was divided from the body,
well, then he's dead.
Define dead.
He glared at Zev as he continued to play vague in a way that would make the ancient Atlantean god Acheron proud.
Would you stop with the head games and please answer the question?
I'm trying. It's not simple.
You and Caleb, what is it with the two of you? Did you take asshole pills this morning? God, you are brothers. I don't know why you can't get along. You're so alike.
Zev snorted.
You think we're bad? You should meet our father sometime. Your great-great-grandfather is a total piece of work.
But to answer your question, Nick, Zavid would need to be reborn here.
Yes, you could do that. The Malachi theoretically has power, but that kind of thing will cost you. It's not free. And the universal powers frown on it. It's like altering time. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. The hardest part of life is knowing when to walk away and let fate run its course, even though it's a kick in the stones to let it do it.
And if that was you trapped there, would you still be advocating a retreat?
It was me trapped there for countless centuries. And yes, it sucked.
He reached over his shoulder to rub at his back.
You want to know why I choose to stay in my cat form most of the time?
You hate people.
He shook his head.
When I'm a cat, I'm not reminded of the fact that my own father ripped my wings off my back in a fit of anger over something I didn't do. You've no idea how many times I instinctively try to move them, only to remember they're gone. And why?
Yeah, that had to burn, soul deep. Having wings himself, he knew they were the same as an appendage. It would be the same as someone ripping off an arm or leg.
I'm sorry.
Zev shrugged.
The point is, we all have our own version of misery we deal with. And I do feel badly about Zavid. But you go down there, and there's no easy way back. It's a trap for you, trust me. Noir will own you for eternity.
My father escaped.
By betraying a friend. You ready to do that?
Nick snorted. Depends on the friend.
Zev gave him a flat, droll stare. Lighten up, it was a joke. Sort of. Letting out a tired sigh, Nick checked his watch.
Anyway, I gotta get to work. Keep an eye on my mom.
Always.
All right. See you later.
He left Zev, knowing the ancient being would die before he allowed anything bad to happen to Charisse Gaucher. That was the only good thing that had come of the deception that had been played with their lives. Zev wasn't just an immortal houseguest Nick had taken in. The ancient cursed god was also his great-grandfather. Yeah, it really messed with his head whenever he stopped to think about it. While they physically appear to be only a couple of years apart in age, their births were separated by thousands of years. He'd had no idea they were related when he'd saved Zev and allowed him to move in here. neither of them had known. It was something they were slowly coming to terms with, especially since Zev had been forced to give up his son and had never thought to see him again. The last thing Zev had ever expected when Nick had rescued him was to find that he had a living granddaughter, never mind her smart-mouthed son. Life as a Malachi was ever a strange, strange thing. But Nick was slowly acclimating to it. Leaving Zev behind, he exited his condo and dug his car keys out of his pocket. His mom was still at work and would be there for another hour. Until Zev had moved in with them, Nick would have been worried about her walking home from the bar and grill where she worked by herself. But Zev would head over and see her home for him. And he'd die before he allowed any harm to come to her. That was the only thing that allowed Nick to function these days, especially given the number of creatures out to claim a piece of his hide and who were willing to use his mom as a bargaining chip to get to him. Thanks, Dad, for that birthright. Of course, he couldn't blame it all on his father. A large chunk of it had to do with his own surly attitude of pissing off everyone around him, and in particular the Grim Reaper, War, and the essence of all evil himself. Nick had done all that on his own. No help whatsoever. In retrospect, he should have thought it through a little better before he lipped off at them. But at the time, he'd been a little put out. It had seemed like a good idea. Now? Well, he wasn't gutted yet. They hadn't captured or killed his mother or Cody, so he was almost winning. Some days. Yeah, that was the lie he was gonna go with for now. It allowed him to sleep a few hours at night, so long as nothing scratched at the windows or walls. Pushing it out of his mind, he headed for Kyrian's and tried to focus on the next coming near-death experience, facing his immortal boss with bad news.
Nick.
Nick blinked at the deep, thick, indefinable accent that belonged exclusively to Acheron Parthenopaeus. An accent that came and went on Ash's whims, much like his bizarre hair color that often rivaled Zev's for garish hideousness. But in Ash's case, it was a personal choice, as were the facial piercings and extreme goth wardrobe, something Acheron did in order to be off-putting and intimidating, not that he really needed it given his mammoth 6'8" of height. And that was without the additional 3 inches he gained by wearing his red Doc Martens combat boots. Or the terrifying aura that said he'd rather rip your spine out than converse with you. A normal person with any kind of survival instinct would run for cover. Luckily, normality had waved goodbye to Nick a long time ago and taken his sanity with it. Turning to look at Ash, he raked a teasing grin over the ancient immortal's intimidating lope and let it linger on his waist-length hair. Nice shade of green you got going on there, buddy. Should I call Commissioner Gordon and let him know the Joker's back in town? Ash didn't comment on his snide tone as he used his inhuman powers to close the door behind him as he drew closer to Nick's location. 'Cause that wasn't unnerving at all. Good thing Nick was used to Ash's idiosyncrasies, otherwise Kyrian would be looking for new help, after having to clean up a massive urine stain from his expensive carpets. Ash paused beside Nick to frown down at him.
So, if I'm the Joker, that would make you...
The boy wonder.
So, what are you doing in here, Dick?
Ouch! Somebody call me a burn unit. Shaking his hand, Nick laughed and tried to deflect Ash's attention from the fact that he'd been caught in Kyrian's solarium, where his boss kept the ancient Greek statue of his 3 sisters. It was one of the few things Kyrian had in the house from his days as a Greek prince. While he was proud of his heritage, Kyrian didn't keep a lot of his past around. It was as if it was too painful for him to bear. His sisters, however, were another matter. At least once a night, he'd come in here and visit with them. Sometimes he'd even leave flowers at the base of their feet. Nick screwed his face up, unwilling to admit that he'd come in here trying to use the eye to see if he could detect scenes from Kyrian's past. Nothing? Ash arched a brow that said he knew Nick was lying, but didn't feel like calling him out on it.
Where's Rosa?
She wasn't feeling well. I beat her down and made her go home early.
What act of Congress did that take?
Ash wasn't joking about that. Kirian's ornery housekeeper never neglected her duty or Kirian, who she saw as another child and treated with utmost care and regard. There was only one other male who had any kind of power over her. An act of Miguel. I've learned to play dirty. One call to the sun and the mothership caves. Ash sucked his breath in sharply.
That's harsh, Gouche.
Yeah, I fight to win.
I'll remember that in the future.
Ash started to withdraw. Hey, Ash? Nick hesitated as Ash paused to look back at him. Can I ask you something?
Sure, kid.
How do you live when you know the future? Ash snorted.
Wow, you just dove right in there with no preamble.
Yeah, I tend to do that sort of thing. You taught me to drive, you know how I am, full throttle, all the time. Trash cans and pedestrians be danged.
And I'm still in therapy over it, too. 11,000 years without any serious trauma, and 5 months of driving with you, and I have more PTSD than 5 tours as a war vet.
Ha ha.
You laugh, Ash scoffed. I'm serious.
So am I. Nick sobered as he touched the eye he still held in his pocket. How do you cope with knowing what's going to happen to everyone around you? Doesn't it ever freak you out? Ash let out an elongated breath before he answered.
I try not to look.
Nick rolled his eyes. I'm serious.
Me too. It's all you can do. Because when you look in and see what's coming for those around you, that's when you really screw things up.
How do you mean?
Simple. You try to avoid this and cause that, and the minute you do, you get blindsided by an unexpected twist caused by the actions you took. Case in point, the worst events in my life were a direct result of someone trying to help me. I'd have been better off had the ones who loved me just let fate play out instead of trying to circumvent it. It's why I try really hard not to involve myself in the free will of others.
Does it work? Ash shrugged.
Yes and no. It's painful at times. Like watching a child you love on the playground when you know they're about to tumble. You have that split second where you think, do I catch them? Or let them skin their knee and learn about gravity? It's an innate craving to want to keep them from harm, but if you don't let them learn now, the later repercussions can be a lot more catastrophic. Unfortunately, you don't know how bad until it's too late.
Like marrying my wife. Nick turned at the sound of Kirian's unexpected Greek accent behind them. There was no missing the pain in his tone. He rarely spoke of Theany. Not that he blamed him. His ex had done a number on him when she'd handed Kirian over to his bitterest enemies to be tortured and then crucified as a traitor of the Roman Empire. It was one thing to read about history in school, another thing to interact with the people who'd actually lived it and been affected by it. Glancing at Acheron, Kirian moved to stand next to Nick.
You remind me so much of myself at your age, boy. Hot-headed and stubborn. No one could ever tell me anything. I had to learn it for myself. My father did everything he could to talk sense into me, and I wouldn't hear it for anything. I thought he was prejudiced and old-fashioned, set in his ways. How stupid he was to judge a woman he didn't even know, based on her occupation that I thought she'd been forced into.
Perhaps, but it didn't change one basic thing that Nick would always come back to. She shouldn't have betrayed you.
I shouldn't have been blind.
Ash clapped Kirian on his shoulder.
We make our own realities, brother. See what we want to in others and ourselves, always.
Kyrian nodded. And I saw heart where there was only greed. Truth where none was spoken.
It's easy to get suckered when you're young.
He laughed bitterly.
My father used to always say, Kyrian, my son, you're not a pot of gold to anyone but me and your mother, and we will always love and worship the ground you tread upon. Sadly, the rest of the world won't cherish you for your worth. All they see is a smart-mouthed brat. For everyone loves a self-made man and despises his spoiled, entitled issue.
Nick grimaced. Man, that's harsh.
But true. And I never turned my ear. Rather, I chased the shiny apple, only to find the swallowed fruit bitter on my tongue.
He reached up to touch the marbled hand of his youngest sister, as if he could still feel the flesh of her skin.
You would have thought, with my sisters forever nagging me and pointing out my endless list of flaws, that they'd have broken my spirit when I was young. And I'd have known not everyone would seek or enjoy my company.
Nick snorted at his self-deprecating humor. Your wife was stupid.
No, Nick. Daoni was quite clever and calculating. She knew exactly what she wanted and wasn't afraid to go after it. I was the idiot who closed my eyes to things I should have seen.
He narrowed his gaze.
She was nothing like your Cody. But to answer your earlier question, it's not as hard to live with the future you know as it is to live with the future you don't. Uncertainty is the hardest cross to bear. You will spend most of your life letting that shred your time. Does she love me? Should I do this or that instead?
Ash nodded.
Kyrian's right. Nothing tears at the soul more than making a decision when you don't know how it's going to ultimately play out, and what you're going to be left with when it's all over.
Except living with the burden of making a bad one, Nick mumbled. Kyrian snorted.
Wow, Asheron. He does listen to us, after all. I think I'm scared now. Surely this is a sign of the apocalypse.
Nick blew him a raspberry. Well, boss, as long as it doesn't involve any more zombies, I can handle it.
They both groaned at his reminder.
Madog hasn't been programming again, has he?
Nick shook his head at Kyrian's question. We've all banned him from computers, threatened to break all his fingers, toes, and glasses.
Good. He's brilliant, but terrifying.
I know, right? And poor Bubba. He and Mark have nothing left to chase. They're stuck with survival glasses. Maybe we ought to throw him a bone.
Kyrian scoffed.
I think I could use some boredom for a while. What do you think, Asher? Boredom. What is this foreign word you speak of, General? I fear I know nothing of it.
Nick laughed. It always amused him when Ash and Kyrian acted like kids. At least until Ash's phone went off. Excusing himself, he went to answer it in private. Kyrian crossed his arms over his chest.
So why are you in here?
I was curious, he admitted. I know you've told me about your sisters, and since I don't have any siblings, I was just trying to imagine what you must have been like as a kid with them. It screws with my head.
Sadness haunted Kyrian's eyes as he looked up at the huge statue.
It's sad we don't appreciate our childhoods until it's too late. At least those of us who had good ones.
What do you mean?
Kyrian sighed.
Just that I took mine for granted. Didn't realize how lucky I was until the day I left home and saw the home's other children grow up in.
Your friend Julian?
He nodded.
Yeah. He opened my eyes to a lot I'd never seen before.
Nick would have liked to have met Kyrian's mentor. The more he heard about the ancient Greek general Julian of Macedon, the more he respected him. Speaking of...
You ready to train tonight?
Sure, I can always use another butt-whipping. Stone didn't stuff me in a locker today or slam my head into a fountain. I was beginning to feel neglected.
Kirian laughed.
Boy, you are all kinds of wrong.
I know. I blame it all on my mom. She hugged me so tight when I was little, it deprived me of oxygen. Gave me brain damage.
When Ash returned, he had the same grimace on his face that Bubba wore whenever someone told him zombies weren't real. Or that Oprah was being preempted for another program. Yeah, those were bad days for everyone.
What's going on?
Kirian asked.
Squire's Council. There were a couple of deaths last night.
Couple?
He nodded, slowly. Nick didn't like the sound of that any more than Kirian did. By the look on your face, I'm assuming they didn't choke on a bad plate of red beans and rice?
Of course not.
Nick wrinkled his nose. Do I want to know?
Given your reaction the last time one was killed, probably not. But at least we're not in my car now, so I don't have to worry about you clawing on my upholstery again.
You're never going to let me live that down, are you?
You all but stained my seat.
He passed a dry stare to Kirian.
Wonder if we neuter him, if it would calm him down any.
Kirian laughed.
Might. However, his mother would neuter us afterward. Don't know about you, but I would miss those body parts. I could definitely live without them.
Ash mumbled in a barely audible tone.
Unfortunately, the beast I have to endure couldn't, and she'd make me miserable.
He growled in the back of his throat.
Anyway, it was bad.
He spoke those last four words much louder and in staccato.
They're thinking demons got to them.
Nick went bug-eyed at the thought.
Okay, I don't care for this thought of demons eating squires.
Even if he was a Malachi, it just seemed like bad form.
Don't worry. We won't let them eat you. Alive, anyway.
Nick snorted at Kirian's dry tone. Thanks, boss, he said sarcastically. Now, I'm glad I didn't save you any of Rose's cookies. You're not worthy.
Kirian clapped him on the back.
That's okay. You'll have earned them before the night's over.
How you figure?
It was payday today. Artemis dropped my money in the pool. You get to dive for it.
Nick bristled indignantly. He hated that the ancient Greek goddess Artemis couldn't get with the times and pay her dark hunters in cash or electronically. No, she still thought it was the Dark Ages, and once a month plopped a buttload of gold bars and gems on them. Saddest part was that for a goddess renowned for her unerring archery skills, she had no aim. She always dumped it somewhere extremely inconvenient. Then again, she might be doing it on purpose. That made the most sense.
He glared at Kirian.
Are you...
He paused as he realized what that look on Kirian's face meant.
No. Not there again. Anywhere but there?
Oh, yeah. It landed at the bottom of my pool in the backyard. Have fun digging it all out. Make sure you don't miss any diamonds this time.
And with that, Kirian walked off with an evil laugh echoing behind him.
I hate you, Nick called after his departing back. And I quit.
You can't quit. I own your sorry ass. And your mom won't let you quit until you pay off the hospital debt you owe me.
Nick mocked his words while Asheron laughed at him. He grimaced at the ancient being.
Don't you need a cute, tacky shirt-wearing indentured servant?
Like a hole in my head. No.
You both suck.
Yeah. It's what the fangs are for.
Asheron ran his tongue down one of them to emphasize his point. Sighing irritably, Nick shook his head.
Fine. Just don't let me get eaten like those other squires. Remember, you can't kill me till I'm 24. That's our bargain.
Asheron shoved at him.
You're so weird.
And yet you like me. What's that say about you?
That I don't get out much.
As Nick headed for the door, Ash stopped him.
You want me to lend a hand with the pool?
Nah, I got it. Go save the world. But if you want to zap me some swim trunks, I'm sure Kirian's neighbors would be eternally grateful. Otherwise, I'm going commando.
No sooner had he spoken than a pair appeared on his head. Groaning in agony, Nick pulled them off. I see now where Artemis gets her aim. You two train together much? Acheron muttered something in Atlantean as he walked away. That wasn't unusual. What made Nick pause was the fact that this time, he understood the words, as well as if they'd been spoken in English or Cajun.
Kid, don't even say Artie right now. Last thing I want to do is deal with her tonight. Don't stir that red-headed dragon. She might hear you and come calling.
At least one of his Malachi powers was working the way it was supposed to. But that actually scared him. He wasn't used to it. They normally backfired, misfired, went sideways, or flat out did nothing. And as he looked back at the statue, for the first time he saw Kyrian's sisters not in their pale marble forms, but as they'd looked in his lifetime. Phaedra, who was younger by only a single year, she'd sang with the voice of an angel. Althea, the baby of the family, who had been Kyrian's favorite sister, the one he doted on incessantly and coddled to the point that his parents had complained that he'd spoiled her rotten. While his whole family had been devastated by his death, she had taken it the hardest of his sisters. So much so that she'd shaved her blonde hair that had been a match for Kyrian's and had refused to speak. And Diana, the sister he'd been the most like, and as a result they'd fought constantly, about everything under the heavens, both stubborn and unyielding. Ironically, she'd ended up married to one of his best friends, who was very similar in temperament and form to Kyrian, as if she'd missed her brother so much that she'd gone looking for someone who reminded her of him. Not only could Nick see them, he felt Kyrian's love for them, their love for Kyrian. It was so incredibly strong that it traversed the ether and spanned the centuries to form a protective cloak for his boss even 2,000 years later. No wonder Kyrian had taken so much care to protect and carry this one memento of them with him throughout time. Kyrian was right. He'd been blessed by the gods. His family had done their best to protect their son and keep him safe. Even when he insisted that he fight as a soldier, his father had surrounded him with a personal guard of the best soldiers he could find and sent him to train under Julian of Macedon, the most skilled and respected commander of the Greek city-states of that time. Alcus of Thrace had spared no expense to train and protect his only son. He would have done anything for Kyrian. And when Kyrian had married a prostitute against his wishes, Alcus had tried his best to make his unreasonable son see the truth of her. Kyrian had refused. In love with the facade she presented to him, and deluded by her lies, he'd listened to no one about his Theany. Nothing could make him let her go, not even when his father had disinherited him as a last resort. She had been his life, and he had abandoned his troops when he'd heard that she was in danger. Riding day and night, he'd gone to her side to rescue her, only to have her drug him and turn him over to his enemies for torture and execution. His family had done everything they could to try and save him. Alcus had offered to surrender all of Thrace to Roman control. Kyrian's sister Althea had offered herself up as a slave to his mortal enemy, Valerius Magnus the Elder. That was true love, unconditional love. After all the bitter words Kyrian had spoken to his father had still done his best to save him and spare him from Theane's treachery. Unfortunately, the Romans had no intention of letting him go. He'd been too good a commander for that. They knew if he were to ever go free again, he'd defeat them and destroy their empire. As the ancient historians had written, when Kyrian of Thrace led his army to war, Rome fell like leaves during a bitter frost. And on the day his father had received word of Kyrian's execution, he'd killed himself over it. Nick blinked back tears as he choked on grief. He could feel the anguish and guilt that Kyrian lived with every day for what he'd done.
By seeking his own happiness and believing the lies of one treacherous woman, he'd ruined his entire family and destroyed his nation. One moment of blind selfishness. No wonder he didn't talk about it. No wonder Kieran didn't trust anyone. How could he? But that was the trick in life. Deciphering who had your best interests at heart. Who was in it for you, and who was in it for themselves. More often than not, you didn't find out until you were like Kieran and left hanging to die. Nick reached up and touched Althea's hand. For the merest instant, he could have sworn that she gripped his fingers. Yeah, that was freaky. Don't worry, he whispered to them. I won't let anything happen to your brother. I've got his back for you.
But who has yours?
Nick jumped at the disembodied voice that whispered in his ear. What the heck? Using his powers, he scanned the room with his demonic eyes. There was nothing here. No sound in the ether. No scent. Yet that had definitely been a feminine voice speaking English. Rap. The one thing Nick had learned these last couple of years. A disembodied voice whispering in his ear was a harbinger of bad things a-coming. And it definitely didn't help that both war and death had declared open warfare on him already. The Grim Reaper had told him to buckle up. Obviously, it was on.
Chapter 2.
Whoa, Gaucher, you're jumpier than normal, which, given the fact that you could double as a hyperactive squirrel most days, says a lot.
Nick grimaced as Brynna Adams and Lashonda Thibodeau stopped beside him at his locker.
Thought you were Caleb sneaking up on me to do something foul like wedgie me before class, he lied, hoping Brynna would accept his excuse. Not that Caleb needed to sneak up on him to give him a wedgie. Evil demon-kin snot could do that with his Jedi mind tricks from across the room, and had been known to do so in his crankier moods. One day Nick was going to fully master his and return that favor. Then run like hell into another dimension where hopefully Caleb would never find him.
Ah, that explains it.
Adorably cute, as she stepped up to reach for her lock, Brynna was an average girl next door who dressed in understated khaki pants and conservative button-downs, while Lashonda was her flamboyant best friend with a flair for stylish J-pop trends. Today, Sean had gone in for that whole sexy Japanese Lolita schoolgirl uniform that reminded Nick of something out of a fantasy manga. Right down to the frilly white cuffs and bright frou-frou red bow tie, and a blazer that was two sizes too small, which seriously emphasized a part of her ample anatomy he wasn't looking at because he didn't want to get jack-slapped for sexual harassment. Not that it was the only reason, also because he wasn't a lech. However, he would be a most happy and well-behaved boy if his woman would borrow some of Lashonda's outfits from time to time. Yeah, Cody would look incredible in that. And as usual, Sean had gone all out with the theme. She even had her sister locks pulled back with a matching navy headband and white knee-high socks and stacked Mary Jane shoes. Nick cringed the second that thought went through his head and was highly mortified that he knew what those black shiny shoes were called. But then Cody was slowly civilizing him on such things. Any day now, he'd be eating off plates and drinking out of glasses like a real person. Though to be honest, he was coming to his education under duress. He still didn't really understand why women needed more than two pairs of shoes, those you wore and the pair your mom forced on your feet for church and special occasions because your regular shoes were holy and not holy. Blushing, he stepped out of the way so that Brynna could open her locker door to grab her books. Did you get all the English reading done last night?
No,
Brynna let out a sound of supreme annoyance. It was too much, did you? And if you say yes, I will hurt you.
I cheated and just had Kieran tell me about it. Great thing about working for an ancient Greek boss? He knows the Iliad like the back of his hand and actually enjoys lecturing me on it. I think he personally knew Achilles.
She snorted. He's not that old.
No, but Ash is. She laughed.
Actually,
tightening her grip on her books, Sean looked around before she leaned in to whisper,
I heard a rumor from my mom that Kyrian slept with the granddaughter of an Amazon queen who fought at Troy.
Nick snorted in denial.
No way.
Sean held up her right hand to testify to its truth.
That's what they claim.
Who's they? Brynna asked.
Other Greek dark hunters.
Sean flipped her hair over her shoulder.
Zoe being one of them?
And she's old enough to know. And was an Amazon princess. Nick considered that. Sean would know. Like Brynna, she came from one of the older squire families that had been protecting the identities and existence of dark hunters for generations and providing services and cover for them. Even better, Sean's father was the New Orleans Council lead historian and archive keeper and had been for years. So when it came to the history of the Dark Hunters, what they'd done, who they knew, he was the authority for the region. I'd ask Kyrian about it, but he gets cranky when I get too personal with inquiries. Wonder if Ash knows.
Probably.
Brynna pulled her books out of her locker and shoved them in her tote.
He knows everything.
Not quite. He had no idea Nick was a Malachi. Or that Cody was his niece. For all the powers Asheron commanded, there were a surprising amount of things that could be kept hidden from the ancient Atlantean. But Nick didn't correct her. He was quickly learning that most everyone and everything had a weakness of some sort. Nature tended to build in an off switch. Every Titanic met its iceberg. That's what Kyrian had told him. The point of the Iliad was balance and moderation. Regression to the mean. Every Hector met his Achilles. Every Achilles met his Paris. Every Priam had an Agamemnon, and every Agamemnon had a Clytemnestra. Sooner or later, everyone paid for the wrongs they did to others, and when karma came home to roost, she brought nasty, irritable friends with spears. It was making the hardest choices at the hardest times, and learning to stand by them and bear out the consequences. Speaking of, he turned as he felt the powerful presence of a praetor who never failed to put a dopey grin on his face. The minute he saw Cody's bright green eyes and tight red tee, he realized he should have worn looser pants. Thankfully, he had on a really baggy Hawaiian shirt.
So yeah, my baby, sure.
Her gorgeous smile only made his condition worse.
One day I have got to learn Cajun,
she scowled at him.
For all I know, you could be insulting me with that deep, smooth drawl of yours.
Nick dropped his backpack as casually from his shoulders as he could and pulled it around to the front as an added layer of protection, just in case.
No, Shell. I would never do that to my bed.
Brynna laughed. I don't know, girl. Long as I've been here, I still haven't gotten the hang of it.
Sean tissed at her.
Y'all break my native heart.
Nick broke out into his thickest Cajun drawl.
They just don't know, Shad. They just don't know. What we gonna do with the likes of them? I vote we feed them to some gators later.
Sean winked at him.
Brynna scowled at Cody. You ever feel like you need subtitles when he does that? No. Unless he's actually speaking Cajun, I can understand it, even when it's thick and fast. But Bubba and Mark? I definitely need subtitles when they get excited and start babbling. I've no idea what language they're speaking.
That'll be Middle Tennessee good old boy, Nick teased. Their accents aren't that thick.
For you, Cody teased. But you have to remember that English isn't my native tongue anyway.
Brynna's eyes widened.
Is it not?
Cody went pale as she realized that she'd slipped up in front of Brynna and Sean.
No. I was born in Greece, and my mother's Egyptian.
Really?
Brynna gaped as she passed a glance to Nick.
We were just talking about Greece, so did you learn Greek or Arabic first?
Nick arched a brow as he waited to hear this. While the language of modern Egypt was Arabic, Cody's mother was an ancient goddess, so she'd grown up speaking Hieratic and Demotic Egyptian. Languages long dead and forgotten.
Even her Greek predated Kyrian's native Koine Greek dialect that was very different from the modern-day spoken language of Greece. "Greek," she said quickly.
"Nice save."
Cody slid an irritated frown toward him. "Don't take that tone with me. I'll have you know I'm fluent in Arabic, too. My dad spent a number of years living in North Africa and traveling among the nomadic tribes there." That was something he hadn't known before. Weird.
"I'm impressed," Sean said. "You have no trace of an accent. How did you manage to be so lucky?"
Cody shrugged. "Good genes. While my parents pick up languages fast, they never could quite shake their accents, but my brothers did."
Brenna gaped even wider.
"I didn't know you had brothers, too. Why don't they go to school here?"
"You were letting out all kinds of secrets today. What, someone cast a truth spell on you?"
Nick shot his thought to her.
"I know. Help me."
Nick cleared his throat. "Her brothers are a lot older. Neither of them live in the state."
"Ah," Brenna nodded. "Believe me, I get it. My family's huge and spread all over. It's such a pain."
The bell rang. Nick groaned out loud as students scrambled for their classes.
"Where's my hemorrhoid? Not like him to not have attached himself.